So, Buddy Charles, tell me about coming to Charleston and WTMA.
Being a Navy junior, I moved to Charleston in 1954. As I moved there in September, WTMA had just been purchased by Atlantic Coast Broadcasting, I believe.
They were owned by the newspaper before then, I believe,
the
right?
The Charleston Evening Post, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Chuck Smith was the station manager, and Jack Gale and Steve Carroll and Bill Walton were the on-air personalities in those days. I was 15 and a sophomore at Shikora High School, which is, it was in Charleston Heights. It's now a middle school and named something else, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
Sometime in September, WTMA had a dance for all the teenagers in Charleston down at the Fort Sumter Hotel, which I believe is now a retirement home. And I attended the dance, and being a pushy teen, I guess, I got to know not only the three personalities, but Chuck Smith as well. About 2 weeks later, I ran into Chuck Smith at the ball field alongside of Shikora High School, and he was doing kind of a one-man operation, announcer engineer for the National Little League playoffs. He needed someone to pull tags on ball players and monitor gain on the portable mixer he had there, so having met him, I volunteered, and he accepted. About 2 weeks later, I was running gain at church remotes. Time went by, and by, Christmas, I'd learned to turn the transmitter on and off. In those days, our studios were located in the Dock Street Theater building, and the transmitter, I guess it's still where it is, across the Ashley River there.
At the very end of Orange Grove Road.
Right. At that time, I think we used to say at the Eagle's Nest. We could broadcast from the transmitter site, but I think we only did that once when we had a real telephone problem. The rest of the time, it was always the Dock Street Theater, which were nice, and actually a nice studio. We had a control room there and just one studio that had a table with three microphones, a piano, and taping was comparatively new. We had two magnacorders sitting on the back rack and some device which enabled us to get them so that we could have 10.5-inch reels so we could record an hour at a time.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when I was a senior there at the Citadel, they did put in a new board, and I think by that time they had switched over and they were using quarter-track Mobius loop cartridges.
Oh, tape cartridges, yeah.
Yeah, so we had gone from gouging aluminum to tape cartridges. Anyway, Jack Gale didn't show up one morning after a Christmas party. I turned the transmitter on, started playing music. The telephone rang, and Chuck Smith said, "Where's Jack?" And I said, "Well, he's not here, Mr. Smith." And he said, "Well, do you think you can handle it until he gets in?" And that was the start of my being an announcer at WTMA. So I spent my sophomore, my junior, and my senior year of high school there working. And then I went to the Citadel there in Charleston, graduated in 1961, and went on to other things. Didn't stay in the radio business, but had a lot of fun those 3 years.
So the time you worked at WTMA was when you were in high school?
When I was in high school.
I can imagine WTMA was a top 40 station and a very popular station in town, the number one station in the 50s as well as the 60s and 70s, that being a high school kid on the air as a disc jockey at such a huge radio station, you probably didn't have any problem getting dates, did you?
Well, I didn't probably have any problem getting them if I had the time to have them. They had me working on the weekends, and I remember one time I was substituting for Jack in the morning. I did an afternoon show, and Bill Walton called in sick, so I was on the air 18 hours one day. I don't know that we'll do that these days. And then, of course, we did a program on Saturday evening, also called The Hound Dog. You probably talked to Jack about that. He was known as King Hound Dog, and I referred to myself as Duke of the Dogs. It was kind of like Wolfman Jack used to do, except I'm not sure whether he came along later or was at the same time. You know, we used to go, "Hound Dogs, here we go, rocking and rolling with Fats Domino."
I bet that was a hoot to listen to.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we had a great time. And, of course, in those days, we used to call ourselves Radio Charleston. This is Radio Charleston, WTMA, WTMA FM. Once in a while, when we got carried away with ourselves, we'd call it Whitma and Whitmafoom. Of course, it was kind of crazy for a 15-year-old to come on and say, "It's Budweiser taste time in Charleston. Time to prove to yourself that those who know buy Bud." Correct Eastern Standard Time, time to buy Bud. It's 9:30.
So you were probably a pretty popular guy in your high school, having a job at WTMA on the weekends and the evenings, huh?
Yes, but it took them a little while to figure it out because my actual name is Charles Gassett. I was a Navy junior, but my father, being a naval officer, was not too happy about having his son working on a radio station. So we flipped the name around and used my first name as my last name and my middle name as my first name. So it became Buddy Charles.
Oh, that's neat.
I guess people would probably like to remember the times that we broadcast from Kate's Drive-In. I'm sure that's not in business any longer, the patio drive-ins. We had little broadcast booths up at the top of the two drive-ins and would play records from there. Everybody would honk their horns and scream and yell and dance in the parking lot. So that was a good time.
I'm sure when Elvis came to town, you were probably part of that, huh?
Oh, yes. Of course, soon after that, Jack, besides having the Hound Dog radio program, we had a record shop down on King Street. It was called the Hound Dog Record Shop. With the record shop and the radio station, we had entertainers like Pat Boone, Gogie Grant, Eileen Rogers at Folly Beach Pier and at the County Hall. And then later on, we brought in people like Fats Domino, Bo Diddley, and many, many, many others all summer long. I remember one night, there was a guy there, his name was Ted something. Ted and I were pulling an all-night hurricane watch. I was on the board, and Ted was announcing for some reason that evening, and he said, winds of 150 miles an hour may hit the South Carolina coast.
Wow.
And I reached over and slipped through the stack of sound effects records we had and found High Velocity Wind and threw it down on the table and then just brought it up very slowly behind him in the background. And he said, my God, they're here now! About a minute later, Line 3, which was the line that the boss always called in on, was flashing. And Chuck Smith, you guys, this could be serious. Let's not play around up there. But other than that, you know, we had a pretty good time.
How was Chuck Smith to work for?
Well, for me, he was pretty good because, you know, I was a kid, and I guess he looked at me as a kid, even though he gave me a key to the front door, you know. But I think he was pretty hard on Gail and Walton, because he expected TMA to stay on top. I think he probably didn't necessarily put his livelihood that I would show up every day because, you know, you are a teenager and you don't have perhaps the same kind of responsibility that others would have. But I was there, and you know, I was there many times that other people weren't there.
Do you remember how much you made at WTMA back in the 50s?
God, it was something like $2 an hour.
Yeah, that's pretty good for the 50s.
Yeah, yeah, about $2 an hour.
A lot more than minimum wage.
Yeah, but what he would allow, and I did quite a bit of that, he would allow us to go out and make a deal with like a clothing store or something of that nature and actually throw spots in for the clothing store, which we had kind of put together. So we got free clothes, and we gave the clothing store spots on the shows that we would do, you know. So that was kind of like money under the table. In the days that I started, you know, again, 54, 55, 56, everyone used to do their own news, their own everything. You know, you get up from the control board, you'd go in a little closet, pull the news off the AP, you'd come back and say, well, I'll take this one, this one, this one, and this one. You were fired up and ready to go. Jack, on the other hand, he used to pick up the newspaper as he came over the threshold in the morning. I think he did the news out of the newspaper.
And you know what? A lot of radio stations still do that to this day.
But, of course, he used to do those funny voices, you know, on the air, Dr. Ill and Lady Hortense and the Mighty Gale Players, we called them.
He was a real character, wasn't he?
Yeah, yeah. In those days, I guess he was about 29, maybe 30, and Walton was probably about 28, 29. They were both about the same age. I think Chuck Smith was probably, you know, again, at 15, it's hard to judge ages, but I would say he was in his 40s. Jack Gale lived on Highway 17, just across the Ashley River Bridge, not very far on the other side of Highway 17. He was speeding in one morning and got stopped by a policeman. The policeman said, where are you going to in such a hurry? And he says, I'm on my way to the station to make a safety spot. And they sat there and laughed about that forever.
It is pretty funny.
6 o'clock in the morning.
So what'd you do when you got out of the Citadel?
Well, of course, most of us end up in the Army or the Air Force for a while. I was in the Air Force, as a communications officer. And then through life, I've been an entrepreneur. I owned a high-fidelity company where we made amplifiers, preamplifiers, and equalizers used in broadcast and home entertainment situations.
What was the name of that company?
Sound Craftsman.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So I owned that in kiln or a furnace manufacturing company called Nova, where we made furnaces for people to do hobby ceramics and jewelry, exported all kinds of products, but never went back into the entertainment side of things.
Do you wish you had?
I probably do, but...
You would have had nearly as much money.
That may be true, but I remember my father, of course, again, back to this Navy situation, you know, he figured, well, you better go to college, and the Citadel was a good college, still is, so you can get a real job.
He was a smart guy.
Yeah. They were good days, truly what I would call the swinging 50s.